Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a subject today that I believe should be pertinent to each and every listener. That is the question, if you please, should Christians be involved in politics? In case you haven't pondered that question, that indicates you don't know your scripture, number one, because there is no reason that churches, Christians, and pastors ought not to be involved. It's our responsibility, our civic responsibility, our governmental responsibility, biblical, theological, doctrinal responsibility. And so the answer to that question is yes, we need to be involved. And that's the purpose of this broadcast each and every day, as we share the truth, and we invite you to call in. The telephone is 831-0917, 831-0917. And ladies and gentlemen, we're interviewing what I consider the best candidate for Florida House District 15, Emily Nunez. Emily's with us today, and I'm thankful that she's taken time out of a busy schedule in these last few days before the primary. Emily, take a moment and share with our listeners the dates for the primary election, when the early voting starts, and the need for them to find you on the ballot and vote.
The date of the primary voting in person is August 23rd. Early voting starts on August 8th.
So we're right around the corner with our voting starting. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it's important that you listen to this broadcast and make a determination what God would have you to do, and vote correctly in doing so. Emily, if you would take some time, share with our listeners, I'm just going to arbitrarily and capriciously say, 3 things that you're passionate about, 4 things that you're passionate about. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, that you're interested in, that you have a passion for, that you wanted to accomplish from day one when you go into the office in Tallahassee in District 15.
Well, to start, constitutional carry is something that I think that absolutely needs to be passed here in the state of Florida. There's already 21 other states that have passed it. The governor has specifically stated that he wanted to see that passed in his administration. And unfortunately, it's been Republicans in the Florida House that have not allowed that bill to make it to the governor's desk in the last legislative session. So that is a bill that I want to see championed, and I will champion that when I get there. Another issue that I'm very passionate about is election integrity. After watching 2,000 mules and hearing concerns from constituents, people still do not have full faith in our electoral system. I plan on sponsoring a bill, one the same as with constitutional carry. There was a bill sponsored in the House that asked for an election audit to happen within the top 5 cities in the state of Florida. And despite what people might feel about our elections here in Florida, you know, trust but verify is the saying that I like to use, and there's no reason why taxpayer dollars cannot be used to pay for an election audit when it's something that taxpayers want. So I will be also supporting that. Also would like to pass and champion a heartbeat bill here in the state of Florida. Now that could probably go to a full abortion ban, considering that states now have control of that issue with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Those are three issues there that I'm going to be focused on and ready to get to work on when I get to the Florida House.
I am delighted to hear those three. Those are the top three. There are several other issues that I believe are interconnected with those three. Number one, Emily, let me ask you this question. Under Governor Rick Scott's administration, Florida passed the legislation signed into law called the Red Flag Law. 29 states have the Red Flag Laws. About 9,000-plus citizens in the state of Florida have had their firearms taken away from them, having to go through the court process of proving innocence in the courts in order to get their firearms returned. Thousands of those still have not succeeded in doing so. It is a law that allows, as you're familiar, it allows a citizen that's angry with a person to call in a surreptitious complaint that that person has his weapon. Let's just hypothetically say that person is accused of walking up and down the sidewalk, waving his rifle in the air, and somebody's going to get hurt, et cetera, et cetera. Are you familiar with enough with the Red Flag Law? Do you believe the Red Flag Laws need to be removed from the books in the state of Florida? I'm passionate about it. I believe that the Red Flag Laws are antithetical to our constitutional liberties. I believe that it's a heavy infringement on the Second Amendment right, and it's a right that is not to be infringed upon, the Bill of Rights tells us. How do you stand on that? What would you do? What is the approach you would take for that?
I am 100% in agreement with you. You know, people right now are tired of electing Republicans who say that they support our Second Amendment rights, yet it was Republicans that have red flag laws passed here in the state of Florida, not the Democrats. So it's within our own party that we're having our Second Amendment rights infringed upon. I would absolutely support legislation to overturn red flag laws here in the state of Florida. Should have never happened, completely unconstitutional, and I will do everything that I can to support getting that bill passed.
I'm thankful to hear that. Emily, hold on for a moment. I believe we have Joshua on the line. Joshua, go ahead with your question or comments, please.
Just a comment. I'm really glad you are interviewing Emily Nunez. I live in Nassau County in her district, and she is absolutely the best candidate for House District 15 if you compare her to her opponent, Dean Black. And what you're saying about the Republican Party and the issue we have with losing our rights, I absolutely believe the greatest threat to us losing our constitutional rights is the, and excuse me for using the term, but rhinos, Republican in name only, allowing that to happen. And I think people are waking up because they, after, like you said, COVID has, you know, that whole shutdown, it kind of shocked people, and it kind of, in a good way, to get involved. And I have never seen more excitement for an election. You know, I'm 40 years old in my lifetime, especially at the state legislature level, and electing a candidate like Emily Nunez. She is a strong conservative fighter that is going to stand up for the people in her district for our constitutional rights, whether it be religious freedom or for our Second Amendment, First Amendment rights. People are tired of the same old politicians and establishment. We're ready for a candidate that is going to put it all on the line, not play political games, but actually stand for what this country was founded on. And I'm so excited that we have a veteran, not only just a veteran, but she's a Mustang. And what that means is it's a term in the military we use for someone who enlisted in the military, but then rose through the ranks and then was able to become an officer and appointed to that leadership role. And Ms. Nunez is an awesome example of our younger generation getting involved, and she's a fearless, tireless fighter, and it's you know, we in Nassau County and House District 15 with the west side of Duval, we really need a strong conservative fighter for us. And that's really much, really all I had to say.
Well, Joshua, I think that was a mouthful. I'm thankful for what you said. I stand with you on that statement. And I say to our listening audience today, and I don't say that I can tell you as a listener how you must vote, but I can tell you I have vetted the candidates, not just this particular seat, but I've vetted our candidates. And I am to say very clearly and articulate very directly that I believe Emily is the best candidate for this seat. And so it's my prayer that our listeners will listen up and will vote for Emily Nunes. I believe that it is a breath of fresh air that's needed. I believe that it is something that every one in the district should do. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you say, I'm not in District 15. She's not the one in my district. Listen very carefully and let me underline and elaborate on this statement. When we elect someone for the Florida House, when they make a decision, introduce a bill, co-sponsor a bill, and vote on a bill, they're doing so based on the entire state, not just on their particular district. So therefore, when we put someone in office, we're putting someone in office and represent all of Floridians, not just a particular segment, though they're elected by that particular district, that particular segment. So ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted today that Emily is with us. Emily, when we talked about, Joshua just talked about rhinos, some people may not understand the term Republicans in name only, and I'm pretty fed up with that myself. I believe that we need to vet the candidates, make the decision based on the candidate's position on each of these issues, and it's I am thankful that you are running. But Emily, there's another major issue that is looming. We have a mayor in the city of Jacksonville that's determined to destroy our heritage historic monuments and made the decision that all of them need to be removed. What will you do? What can you do? What will you do as a representative in District 15, as a Florida representative for we the people in the state of Florida? Will you introduce and or co-sponsor legislation that will make sure that our historic monuments are protected in the state of Florida, each and every county, that they're protected from the hands of those that want to change history?
Absolutely. One of the scariest things about some of the communist takeover in our country is to erase history so that then they can therefore recreate it and implement the changes that they would like to see. So I would absolutely stand for all preservation of our history, our historical monuments. Our country was never a perfect country, but we've grown and we've evolved, and it's always important to remember where we've come from and know where we're going, and I will support that always.
Absolutely. Emily, there's a law in the state of Florida that multitudes listening may not even be familiar with. I am. It's a law that is found in several other states. In fact, I believe it's something like 21, 25 other states. It's the medical immunity law. It was Senate Bill 7014 for the state of Florida. And I'm not trying to diss or denigrate Governor DeSantis. I think he's one of the best governors we've had. I've been in the state of Florida since 1980. He's been one of the best governors we've had for the state of Florida, of which I am eternally grateful. But Senate Bill 7014 was signed by the governor. I pushed it on this radio broadcast for weeks and weeks and weeks. We were fortunate to have, I believe, some 30,000 plus emails sent to the governor, thousands and thousands of other communications to the governor's office. This bill was pushed by the lobbyists for the medical field, medical world in the state of Florida. And Senate Bill 7014, that 7014, that became law, goes through up to July the 1st of 2023. And it allows doctors and hospitals and all medical facilities to, and I'm going to use the term that some may disagree with, it allows doctors, hospitals, and medical institutions to murder COVID patients with total immunity. It prevents any person, family member, filing suit against a hospital or a doctor or a medical association, regardless of what may have been otherwise considered or recognized as malpractice. Emily, I do not know. Now, stop in a minute and let you respond. I do not know of any other profession, any other business, any manufacturers in the nation today that has this kind of immunity against any prosecutorial possibility for them to make a wrong decision. In fact, a person can have a wreck and die in a car, and they can file a suit against the upholstery company that put the fabric in there, saying the fabric went ablaze too soon, et cetera, et cetera. But this total blanket immunity prevents that in the state of Florida and other states that have it. Are you familiar with it and your agreement with that, or would you stand against it and try to have that overturned?
I am familiar with it. I do not agree with it, but I do, as you said, absolutely support our governor, and I think he's the best governor that we've had here in a very long time. I think that it's, why do you need immunity from a virus with a 98% survival rate unless you're doing something completely wrong? I think that all of the COVID hysteria needs to stop. I would support overturning that and getting rid of it, and we need to move forward and move on and learn definitely from our responses and all avenues to COVID.
Absolutely. And for the clarification for our listeners, Emily, when a person goes in the hospital, if the hospital rates that person as COVID, immediately the cash register starts ringing. Ascension Hospital Group across America, for example, last year had a $1.9 billion net profit, 573% profit over the previous years, simply because they were following the CDC protocol. If you agree to follow that protocol, putting a ventilator in a patient gets you $300,000 for the hospital. If you put that patient on remdesivir, you get an additional $20,000 plus 20% bonus. Remdesivir destroys the lungs, the liver, the heart, and the kidneys. Yet that's the protocol. I believe it is nothing less, nothing short of medical malpractice, but families that have lost members in hospitals and medical care treatment facilities have been put in a position that they cannot fight back, as the old cliche goes, cannot get remedy for that taking place. Now, there are organizations that are set up to try with doctors and attorneys joining together in major, major groups across America today to try to remedy that in some future tense. But I am saddened to see our state join in with other states. In fact, other states that have these laws are generally liberal states. And I'm saddened to see our state prevent family members from having recourse for anything of that nature. Emily, hold on a moment. I believe we have Lily on the line. Lily, go with your question or comment, please.
Yes, Dr. Youngblood, thank you very much. And we're happy to have Emily on this morning. My concern, I'm pretty new to voting in Jacksonville, so may probably pardon my ignorance, but I'm looking at my mail-in ballot, and her name is not on it, so she's not in the district or something like that.
Yes, she would not be. If she's not on your ballot, she's not in your district. But we are promoting, I'm promoting personally, Emily, because I believe she's the best candidate for that district, District 15. You're probably in a different district if she's not on your ballot. But you can pray for her, and in just a moment she'll give contact information. You can pray for her. You can contribute to her campaign. You can encourage others that's in that district to vote. Emily, how do you respond to Lily's question and comment?
You answered it pretty well. My district does cover some of Duval County. It's essentially going to be the west side of the of Duval, Chaffee Road, west to the county line, south through down to Baldwin to the Clay County line, and then it comes back on the north side of the district or north side of the county, pretty much Black Hammock Island north. It follows the 295 around the Jacksonville, downtown Jacksonville, and then it goes north into Nassau County. But yes, if you can't vote for me, you might have friends or family that live within the district that can, and I would greatly appreciate your support in letting them know that I am an option for them on the ballot. And also financial contributions would be greatly appreciated, and also prayer is always appreciated.
Amen. Emily, let me correct you on an error. You said I'm always an option. I would have said I'm always the best option, but anyway.
Touché, yes.
I am delighted that you are a great option. Lily, thank you so much for your call. Keep praying and looking up.
Little question. Yes. Is Emily running as a Republican or independent or what? Is she running as a Republican?
Emily, answer that for her.
Yes, I am running as a Republican, and this is a contested Republican primary. I have one opponent. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lily, for your call. Emily, there's an issue that I believe you may or may not be familiar with, but I believe needs to be aired. Right down in Dunellen, there's a man that's about to lose his property. He's 71 years old. He's a veteran. His mother passed away in 2017, 2018. He left town for about 4 weeks to go attend to her funeral and put a person in charge that was his regular lawn care man. Unknown to him, while he was gone, the lawn care man died. So the grass kept growing, and the city started fining him. And the long story I'll make very, very short, the fines accumulated to about $30,000. And now they're in the process of trying to foreclose on his home because of a state law that allows counties and municipalities to do that. And I'm reading the article here. It says, city finds an elderly man $30,000 over uncut grass and tries to steal his home. A Florida town attracted national attention last week for its efforts to fine a 71-year-old retiree nearly $30,000 and then foreclose on his home because he was unable to pay all the fines that had accumulated for not cutting the grass. The reports are the city of Dunedin claims the code enforcement board, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the great details of it is because the grass was not cut and the one would come by almost every day and put another ticket on his door. He was unaware of that, came back. When he was made aware of it, he then started to say, well, I'm going to cut the grass. His lawnmower wouldn't work. He bought a new lawnmower, went through all of the process, and there's not been any willingness to reduce the fines or forego the fines based on the man's circumstances and the situation that had taken place. And now federal court, I'm looking at another article, federal court upholds the $30,000 fine against the Florida man for not cutting his grass. The case could go to the Supreme Court. And it goes on to talk about the 11th Circuit Appeals Court heard the case, and the attorney involved for the homeowner says that the judge misinterpreted the law in relationship to that. But Emily, let me just simply say this. There is a state statute that allows, it is a fact, that allows the cities and municipalities to fine and keep fining based on code enforcement to keep the property looking good. I'm in agreement with parts of that, but I'm not in agreement with the over fining that it outpaces the value of the home in some cases and will allow the city or the county to foreclose on a person's home because of the grass not being cut. Now, I do know in the 2022 legislative session of this year that there was a bill passed. In fact, it's called the Private Property Owners' Right Protection Act. The legislature recognized that some laws, regulations, and ordinances of the state and political entities in the state are applied may inordinately burden, restrict, or limit private property rights without amounting to a taking under the state constitution or the state's United States Constitution. It goes on. It's a 11-page new law that's been passed, but it does not touch on this. And right here in Duval County, and I'll say this and then I'm going to let you respond. Right here in Duval County, we have the same thing, and that's in every county in the state of Florida. About 4 years ago, a doctor, a physician here in the city, donated a house to our church. She donated it because she couldn't do anything with it. They had almost $1 million in fines levied against the property because her husband had died, her two sons had died, all within an 18-month period of time. She could not manage the properties that they had accumulated, and because the grass was growing, they kept fining and levying and ticketing. We went through the chief general counsel's office, went through the city council, and through the legislative body in the here in Duval County, and they claimed that because it's a state statute that they could not mitigate it, could not change it, and had to charge almost $1 million in fines on a house that was worth about $50,000. And we spent 9 months and major man hours in trying to fight it. And finally, we're able to successfully have it reduced down to $1,500, of which when we sold the property, the new buyer paid for. I think that's egregious. We have people losing their homes, being foreclosed on because of the heavy hand of government. And in most cases, in this case here in Duval County, where those that were doing the ticketing, then they had the benefits of when the property goes into foreclosure and is being sold, they're buying the homes back up and then making the profit themselves on reselling it. That is stealing property from homeowners based on a Florida statute that allows them to do so. Now, I've said a whole lot. You're not familiar with it, I'm sure, but would you commit to looking into that and finding out what can be done to prevent the theft of properties from homeowners, property owners that can ill afford to pay these fines that are in many cases more than the property is worth?
So I will answer the first part, which I was not familiar that bill was presented during the legislative session, but I'm glad to hear that it was. I do support home rule. I do believe that local governments have a better idea on how to, you know, what's best for their communities and things of that nature. The only reason why I would ever want to get involved in some of those things is if it violates the rights of the citizens, in which property rights, you know, life, liberty, property is what I absolutely support and what other people have a right to. And I don't think that anyone's home should be foreclosed upon or they should lose their home because of a local ordinance for something as ridiculous as cutting your grass. It's stupid laws and stupid rules like this that makes it so much more important to pay attention in the primary with who you are choosing.
Absolutely.
You know, people who are actually conservative, who actually believe in those stances, who are not bought and paid for, and who are absolutely going to fight for your rights. You know, our government has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, despite Republicans campaigning that they believe in limited government. It's not, you know, the money that's going in that's the problem. It's the money that's going out that's the problem. And they're having to create new ways to fine citizens, taxpayers, in order to keep up with the big government that we've unfortunately have created. I would absolutely look into that and make sure that life, liberty, and property is always protected.
Amen.
And make sure that no one should have to deal with a ridiculous burden for something like cutting your grass.
Emily, take these final moments before our broadcast is over today. Tell our listeners how they can reach you, how they can call you, or go online and get in touch with you. We've got about 30 seconds before we close.
Okay. My email is emily@emilynunez.com. My website is emilynunez.com. And my phone number is 904-403-8903. Those are all the best ways to contact me.
Emily, let me say again, we're praying for you. We're thankful for you. Looking forward to a victory at the ballot box. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
The Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University. 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.